All right, hello and welcome to episode number 21 of the At U2 podcast, talking all things U2, new album news, no more tour dates, and community discussions from the staff of At U2. We are live streaming, of course, at goodstuff.fm/live, and we have with us a couple of regulars and a semi-regular now almost. First up, to my left, we'll just pretend, Mr. Matt McGee, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Chris. How are you? I sound funny, don't I?
You know what else I don't like?
Yeah, that's before and after.
That's what I normally sound like, right?
Okay.
I still have my Dublin voice. I have a cough drop in my mouth, and I might be sounding like B. Arthur all night. So we'll do the best we can.
My wife just faved it. 48.
And coming to us from the middle of the table. I don't know.
Bring it.
Miss Sherry, are you there?
Do I need to say anything?
Sorry, folks. We were a little giddy. We were playing with a soundboard before we started recording, and thus we are in a giddy mood. But that'll make it a fun show, I think, because we've got also Mr. YouTube brother, Mark Baker, is back on the show.
Hello.
The man who's been on stage with U2 more than Bono, I think, is...
I would say that. But yeah, there's been some appearances, they said.
Awesome. So yeah, it's good to have Mark back on. We're of course going to talk a bit about that little show in Paris that was broadcast to the world on HBO and all of the stuff and how it went down and all that kind of stuff. First of all, though, just a couple of little details, housekeeping details to get out. Thanks to @HickU2 for sending in another At U2 podcast photo of himself and how he listens to the show. I'll put it in the show notes, of course, but he tweeted us a picture. I think he was listening to the last episode. And my browser just crashed. Oh, it's in the car, right? That was the one that was in the car. It's cool to see our podcast show up in
closet full of E's.
Yeah. In there, which is awesome. And thanks for sending that in. So yeah, if you tweet us with a photo or use the hashtag YouTube podcast at YouTube podcast, we will, be sure to throw in the show notes, and it's great to see where the show is being listened to all over the world. So let's jump right into the inbox. We have lots of time for the show. First up from @nobody_home2, here's an important question. With the tour over, is this the end of Blonde Bono? Dun, dun, dun.
Ooh, heavy hitting question.
Yeah, deep thoughts, first of all. Don't mess around here on the show. Anybody have any opinions on Blonde Bono?
I think it probably is, but I have no reason for...
No. The Blonde is going to stay. The Blonde will stay.
You think that's his new thing?
It's going to be, at least for the tour. For the tour,
I'll bet you 50 cents it doesn't stay.
You think it's going to go back to black?
Yeah.
No, man. The Blonde is going to stay. I'm not saying I'm a fan of the Blonde, but I have a feeling it's going to stay.
Did you get to run your fingers through the blonde hair? I know there's somebody who's wondering, so I'll just ask.
No, I did not.
Okay.
I did not touch his hair.
How much gray do you think is in Bono's hair, if he's natural? Do you think he's got some gray?
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm 43. I got gray. So Bono's definitely got some gray.
There you go. All right. next question from Pedro Mac 79 asked, actually this is for your U2 brother, for Mark. What age were you when your connection with U2 began and why, and what song, album, tour just clicked for you? Which I think we chatted a bit about when you were on last time, but maybe just in brief, I guess, the song that kind of...
So the tour, well, let me get... The tour would have to be Zoo TV. That was my first time seeing them. The song that clicked for me was Bad and / Running to Stand Still. Those songs initially were the ones that made me go, whoa, this is amazing. But definitely the tour, Zoo TV, once I saw Zoo TV from far away, I was like, I need to see this stuff up close. And then closer, and then closer.
And you got about as close as you can get.
Yeah, that's
about
as close as you
can get. Okay, next question from @Alice01, Alci? I don't know. What do you think Larry and Adam are really thinking when it's their turn to leave the stage while Bono and Edge play? It's often I've wondered what they go do, I'm sure.
I think Adam is thinking, where's my bathrobe?
Yeah. That's the Adam time to bathrobe thing I tweeted about.
They changed their shirts. I noticed that they change their shirts. Like they go and change their shirt.
Right.
That I do. They do change clothes. It's a wardrobe change.
Yeah.
And possibly like a little drink of water.
Potty break.
Yeah, potty break.
Yeah. I'm wondering, who are they going to be bumming a cigarette off of?
What I tend to favor is sandalwood.
Whenever, you know, whenever they do when the two of them leave, or when it's the intermission time and all four of them are gone, I cannot avoid thinking about that scene in Rattle and Hum when it's not the first verse, not the second verse, but the third verse.
Can you pass the tissue, please, Vincent?
Yeah, exactly.
I remember that scene very well.
Boom and in. It's as simple as that. Boom
That's
and
right.
In.
Follow. Stay. Ignore that. Stay with me. Boom and in.
Which sound is that Rattle and Hum? That moment, it just seems like the most sort of like set up. Like, we've got cameras around us. Let's look like we're talking like musicians.
I know, right?
It doesn't. Anyways,
with the BB King song.
That's that could be a future podcast. We all just recite Rattle and Hum to each other.
Chris actually has the sound bites because I've sent them.
Yeah, I thought I
of that exact scene.
New boots and panties.
No, not that.
That's the wrong one. Anyway. Okay, where were we? At U2 Conga asks, what was inside your merce for Mark? Were you
okay?
On stage, you had a merce on, I guess.
Yeah. So
backup mirrors.
In Montreal, okay. In Montreal, when I was carried Bono, I noticed that my pockets were bulging, right? I had like my wallet, my phone, my camera. I had just a change and all this stuff in my pockets, in those silver pants, and they were bulging, right? So I told myself, what can I carry?
Oh, don't you eat.
What can I
my
carry?
My husband's listening. Hey. And he's married.
What could I carry my stuff in that would be cool and on stage? So I had a guy in Toronto who I know, and he knows that I DJ and stuff, and he makes this vinyl record bag, right? And so I asked him if he could make me a record bag that was made with the Songs of Innocence records. Make sense? So there are two people go, where are you carrying a tambourine? So there were two white vinyls that were sewn together in a way that looked like a purse or what I call my merce. And I figured I can get away with it in Europe because it's Europe, right? And so I had all of those things that I normally keep in my pocket in the merce.
Nice.
So money, tickets, cell phone, all the stuff that we carry, I carry in my pockets. I put it in there.
So your Mixler broadcast was broadcasted from your merce.
Actually, no. Actually, I was holding my phone for that. Holding the Mixler. I was holding the phone for the Mixler.
Thank God for that, Mark, because you had one of the better streams.
I couldn't seem to get the second night working. The second night didn't seem to be working, and I felt like HBO was jamming the signals. Maybe. Maybe they were doing something. I'm not sure, but I think I was having a difficult time. The last night in Paris. So I know that the previous night went well, but there was Wi-Fi. I tried Wi-Fi, then I was going to 3G, then it went to LTE, and I, you know, problems, issues. But I think I had it going.
Yeah, I wonder if there's probably just like so many people, extra people, tech people doing stuff, night that it just would overwhelm all the bandwidth or whatever that's available in the area. So one more.
With all of the Snapchatting going on by whoever it was on the band's team, that could eat up a lot of bandwidth right there.
Yeah. Right. We forgot to mention this. I didn't have that even the show notes. The confusion that overwhelmed everybody with what is Snapchat? How do I use it? And why does it look like a ghost?
So funny. What if it's one of Bono's sons, right? Doing this, like they're the right age. They know how to use it. There's nobody else on that staff that knows how to use Snapchat. I guarantee you that.
Do you find it ironic? The band launched Snapchat for the last night. You weren't part of this, Mark, but we got word over Twitter. U2 official had tweeted out, we just joined Snapchat. you should join too and follow us. And we're like, what the heck? So all of a sudden the Twitter feed and even the YouTube community folks started tweeting saying, guys, we're going to we're going to break something here because there were enough of us middle-aged people who have got no idea how to use Snapchat. And I've been avoiding it because I know that that's what people use to like cheat on their spouses with. So, so we're all trying to figure it out being the technological geeks that we are, and we can't figure out Snapchat to save ourselves. And so the band, it ended up being over 13 minutes when it was all said and done and over with their story of 10 second blips of Edge arriving at the arena and then the lead up to the concert. And then throughout the concert, they were doing little Snapchat videos. So, so I don't know what they're going to use Snapchat for during the non-tour time. All I do know is that Snapchat was down for a good chunk of Monday morning, and I have to wonder if that was because of all the YouTube fans crashing yet another online medium, because that's what we do. We crash the internet. So.
Right. Gotcha.
Unrelated, but related to that is Periscope just was announced as the app of the year by Apple. So I don't know. There's some connection there, I'm sure, to YouTube as well. But yeah, I just... It's not that complicated, you guys, to you. You're making it sound, because what's right. really cool on Snapchat is the stories thing, like you were saying. And I've seen they've done this with other stuff for like different cities and stuff with on Snapchat, where you get a little tour of they sort of like do a little bit of a cherry picking of random folks around the area talking about Spain or whatever. And then you get a story that kind of covers all of Spain. It's really kind of cool. And so with the U2 one, it was actually like the problem is you can't go back and see it now. I think it's gone.
Yeah, it
is gone.
24-hour period, it was there and you could sort of see. And it was more behind the scenes stuff that you don't actually see elsewhere. So they were giving sort of exclusive-ish kind of stuff. But yeah. Anyway, I'll publish a tutorial or something for the At You Two folks.
Chris, can we ask how old you are?
I'm 39, so I'm not like a
okay. I was going to say you're
still like, younger than me, babe.
That's true, and younger than me too.
Well, I'm iChris 306. I just Snapchatted a picture of myself podcasting, so there you go.
You know what? You could offer me $1 million right now and say, Matt, Snapchat yourself podcasting, and I would not be able to collect on that money. I have no idea how I would do that.
Oh, that's awesome.
And in the chat, Fabiano's hysterically said, someday U2's going to ask us to join Tinder.
Hey, I actually joked about that on Monday. I said, what's next? Swipe right if you like the song, swipe left if you don't.
Exactly. That's so perfect.
Exactly. So,
okay.
All right. Well, let's segue into just discussing the actual experience that Mark had. And one question that came in the chat room actually that we'll just sort of maybe get out of the way at first is just related to why the show was canceled in the first place and what happened is just wondering if you actually paid a visit to the Bataclan. Is that how you pronounce the venue?
Yeah, the Bataclan. So this is a question for me. I didn't get to visit the Bataclan. To be honest with you, this was a whirlwind trip. There wasn't much time to do much, to be honest with you.
We
literally landed Sunday morning and we were gone Tuesday morning.
Wow.
So it was super duper fast.
Yeah.
So, I didn't get to do some of those things, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, okay. Why don't you take us back to sort of finding out about that it was going to happen again and then sort of a bit of the process of getting there and stuff and whatever details you're allowed to share, obviously. And
so, we after they announced the new dates, shortly then got an email asking if we'd still be available and if we're still interested in going. So that was a resounding yes. Sent my information, got forms sent to me, kind of like a waiver forms for myself and my wife.
Hold on, hey Mark.
Had to fill out.
Mark, hold on a second. So, yep. I'm curious. So they ask you, and you said it was a resounding yes. So seriously, was there any trepidation on your part about going?
Any trepidation? Me, no. Like, you mean like, would I be worried about violence or
safety, security? Because I mean, that was like one of the most common things we talked about in Dublin. Would you go see them in Paris? And there was a lot of no. I don't think I'd want to go.
So a lot of people in Dublin also asked me, would you go? Are you still going to go? Are you going? And then one person said to me, thought it was interesting. He said to me, you know what, Mark, you better make sure you go, because I'll tell you right now, Paris is probably going to be the safest place on earth.
That's true.
From here on in. So I actually didn't have any worries. I didn't think about any worries at all.
Very cool.
I was like, gung ho, no problem. Let's do this. And so,
how is your wife about it?
Paris has been her dream because she speaks French, and so she's always wanted to go, and she's also put up with so much of my U2 fandom over the years that finally here's something that she can also experience and not have to stay home and take care of the baby while I'm out gallivanting and whatnot. So she was more than gung-ho about going. So in Dublin, I got a message asking me what flight do I want to take. So we took a direct flight from Toronto to Paris, and we left Saturday night on the plane, all excited, all giddy, and landed in Paris in the morning. Went through customs, and then just like in the movies, there's a dude standing there with a piece of paper saying "Mark and Jocelyn." And I was like, I think we're supposed to go with him.
And, was it Sam O'Sullivan?
No.
Okay.
Good thing it wasn't Bono driving.
That's right.
On a bike? No,
I would have turned right back around and gotten on that plane.
So this guy was really nice. And he was giving us a bit of a tour and talking to us. And very, very nice. Julian was his name. And he took us to the hotel. And so the hotel was a fancy, fancy, fancy hotel. Sofitel Hotel, it's called. It was fancy, let me tell you. Like, the lobby was like fancy Christmas decorations. Like seriously. Like, my wife and I had to stop and sit down and, like, pose for a picture in the nice – anyway, beautiful hotel. And
like, bidet level fancy or –
like, yeah, well, there was no bidet in my room, okay. But I'm sure if I wanted a room with one, it was there. It was there we met our contact, the woman who I'd been emailing and talking with. Her name was Carol. And Carol sat us down. She pulled out a package, and the package, it had our itinerary. It had all the competition winners and guests. It had her phone numbers. And then she just proceeded to talk about, you know, what's included, what's not included. She gave us spending money, which was shocking to me.
Wow.
Big, big shock. Just pulls out an envelope. Can you count this money? This is money you can use at your leisure and la, la, la. And so we got a, you know, a wealthy dose of some euros. And then the only direction really was, you have free time all day, and at 6 p.m. we want to meet you in the lobby so we can go to the show. So
is your nerves throughout the day? Are you nervous throughout the day, or is it kind of like just?
I'm a little nervous. I'm a little nervous, and I'm kind of going upstairs, coming back downstairs to, like, give her some papers, and then upstairs. And I'm seeing some of the other competition winners filter into the lobby. So right. I'm seeing, you know, I see Amp, and I see Amra, and I see Jacob, the little boy, and his parents. And Jacob is the sweetest kid ever, the sweetest little boy ever. I can't get enough of that guy. Anyway, and I'm seeing some of the other the other winners and their plus ones. As they're checking in and whatnot.
And at that point, have they told you what's going to happen that night exactly, or is it just
you? No.
All right.
Well, this is before Paris 3, right?
This is before Paris 3.
Yeah.
So right. They don't tell us anything. I didn't really ask at first. I just said, you know, what's going to happen? And then she just kept saying things like, oh, you're going to go to the shows and you're going to find out soon enough what's going to happen. But she kind of just, in a polite, the best way possible, danced around giving any absolute answer. So that night,
good like that.
So that night, we all get dressed up. We go down to the lobby, and this was another. She put us all in different cars, the different like traveling vehicles. So the vehicles had our names on a piece of paper. Like vehicle one will be Mark and Jocelyn and Daniela and Maurizio. Vehicle two will be so and so and so and so. And so we get into the vehicles. We drive to the venue. We go through the back way. Get out. Go through security. I have to say, security was. Seemed very intense, even though we were going through the band entrance. Like there was a guy with a dog, and you know, there was the wands and everything. Anyway, we go in to the venue and we're in this holding room that says U2.com. And I don't know, I thought, okay, we're gonna probably meet the band or somebody's gonna come and stop by or whatever, what have you. But we just kind of just all hung out in this room. And then they were like, okay, follow us. So we go down this hallway with all these rooms that seem to be allocated to different people working on the tour for various rooms. And we literally get to the place where Bono enters the venue. And we're told to wait to the side. Bono's going to pass. Then we'll get the key to follow Bono in to the E stage. We wait. Bono goes past, doesn't even look at us. He's focused on the show. He passes, and then we get the key to come inside for that first show. And so we're at the tip of the
East
Gate.
So this was like a dry run for Monday. That's how it went down on Monday too, right?
Yeah. So we watched that show. And everything, and then when that show was over, we were literally whisked away again into vehicles back to the hotel. So then we end up doing the same thing again on Monday night. However, we're in the room, and then we walk down the hallway. Right as we're waiting for Bono, our contact says, "This time, we need all of the competition winners to be in the front row." Of the rail at the back. The plus ones must be behind. And we still don't know what's expected of us or what's going to happen. We don't know anything. And so I'm a little, you know, anxious, and people are like anxious, not knowing what does this mean? Maybe they want us in the front row because they're filming for HBO and they want to make sure we get on camera. Maybe we want to, like, we're unsure. So we're all in the front row. Show happens. Then Mysterious Ways comes and they pull Trish out of the audience. So we're all going, okay. I guess Trish must be the real winner, or you know, or this Trish must be the real winner. And she's a darling. She's such a sweetheart. So I don't think that there's anybody who was thinking ill will, but people were just like, oh, okay, I guess we were lined up so that Bono can choose, and he has chosen Trish. Great.
And the rest of you were just decorations.
Yeah. So at that point, I literally take out my, mixlering, I take out my phone, I start filming Trish, a video of Trish, figures she'd love this as a keepsake, whatever. And at that moment, while the song is going on, Brian Murphy, Bono's bodyguard, comes over and he goes, okay, just so you know, Bono's going to call you all up on stage. When you go on stage, I need you guys to make your way down the ramp. And we're like, what? He's like, he's going to call you on. Just wait till you hear him call you on. When he calls you on, you go up on stage and go down the ramp. And right at the song ends, and next thing I know, I hear Bono going, well, we've flown some people here. They just wouldn't go away. And The next thing I know,
the stage crashers.
The stage crashers. You make something about stage crashers.
Yeah. And they it's like, wait a minute. Away. You invited us up on stage. We didn't crash your stage. I was actually yelling that from my home office. They didn't crash. You invited them up.
I'm grabbing Jacob and pulling him over. And all of a sudden we're up. And the fuzz from the fuzz sound from Elevation starts going. And next thing I know, I'm walking down this ramp in Celebration and going, yahoo, yeah, you, yeah. And
there was pure joy all over your face on Meerkat.
You know,
absolute joy.
I was happy. I was happy. I was happy. I was relieved. I was happy. I don't know. It's like it's like in true U2 form. They never confirm anything, right? They never want to confirm anything. They never want to be absolute. They just kind of go with the moment. And I really feel that they plan to only tell us at that point. So that it would be spontaneous. So people have asked, did you rehearse? Yeah. Did you rehearse that? No. Did you know you're going on stage? No. Surely you must have known. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if he was going to pull each of us up for different times in the show, for different moments. I didn't know what to expect. But when he said, we're all on stage, I was like, oh my gosh. Okay, it's party time. Party time. Party time. And so there we were up on stage dancing. And then Bono brings us back. And then I was just like, wow, we're having a party while they're playing. And I'm jumping around like a goof with my merce. And and I don't know. It was just too surreal. It was too surreal, really. And I'm glad, I'm very thankful and happy that they did it that way, I guess, and that it turned out and nobody fell off the stage and no one got hurt. I was a little worried at first because I thought, you know, my arms are big. I can easily club somebody down. So I try not to, when I dance, I try and go straight up with my hands or straight down and not swing them around.
That's the last thing you want to be is the guy on the HBO broadcast who knocks a kid into the audience off the stage.
I would knock Jacob.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, Emra, you know.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't want to do that. And so we, you know, did our thing. And then I was planning to leave right away, but then I saw that everybody was saying their goodbyes and, you know, touching all the members of the band, saying hello and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, you know, I need to say my byes to everybody. And but I think Bono, everyone made a comment. I didn't realize until after I saw the video, Bono made a comment like, oh, dude, when we hugged. And then that was it. That was it. We came off the stage.
So you didn't have any band time outside of just being on the stage with them.
No band. So I thought we'd have some band time or a visit in the room. No band time, no visit. Thought for sure that we might get I thought we might get like one of those like backstage VIP tours, like the PPC people walking on the stage and getting a tour of the underworld and stuff like that. Yeah, we didn't get that either. We were just stuck in a room.
You were stuck in a moment and you couldn't get out of it.
Stuck in a moment, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But if I could say something, I really felt like the contestants, we didn't know what we were to expect. But we really like bonded. It's kind of weird. We were bonded with this uncertainty of, okay, what are we here for? What they said they were, you know, we were sort of like, you know, everyone's got an ego, perhaps everyone's got their persona or their shtick and whatnot, but we all really like got along and respected each other. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of surprising. And the woman who was in charge of us also made mention of how we were so diplomatic and nice and caring and not idiotic towards each other or being silly. So that was something that I really felt felt good about.
What helps that you all got to go on stage too, because I'm sure if like two of you or three of you only or whatever got pulled up on stage afterwards, it may not have been quite as happy. I mean, not to say you're all mean people or whatever, but that's definitely, you know, you're bonded in that experience of that nobody else or not very many people have of getting pulled up on stage together as a big massive group like that, and which is, you know, really cool. I think it's like Sherry was saying, or someone was saying about it, you know, being sort of like last minute, and that's sort of the way U2 does it. But it strikes me as interesting that they are maybe aware even too that you guys could be, you know, tweeting or whatever, like, hey, they're going to pull me up on Elevation or whatever. And I think the U2 of a few years ago, the PR team and stuff, would have been kind of blissfully unaware of some of that kind of stuff going on. And now they're a little more savvy with that kind of thing, where they know if they tell you anything beforehand, you're going to like tweet it or whatever, or, you know, that kind of stuff. So one question in the chat room was, were you mixlering on stage or what were you doing on stage?
Oh, I gave my phone to Jacob's parents.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that's my shtick now. Whenever something like that happens, I pass the phone off. So I don't cut off the stream.
Nice.
So I pass the phone on. And,
bless
and
your
stuff.
Heart, sir.
In service to fans.
Yeah. So, so, you know, it was, you know, I think talking to Amp too was prior to this in the room, you know, because I was like, Amp, what's going to happen, man? I'm feeling a little frazzled here and whatever. And Amp's like, think about it, Mark. You know, you just got flown to Paris to two shows. You probably never would have been on your radar by your favorite band, and they put you up in a hotel and you're able to bring a plus one and blah blah blah. And I was like, you know
what?
And
they gave you spending money.
And they gave us spending money. He's like, you know what? You can't ask for more. And absolutely, that was, I think at that point everybody felt that kind of feeling. Even though they're a bit frazzled as to what's supposed to happen, I feel like everybody just felt absolutely thankful. Some other things too. Paul, the guy from Spain, they handpicked him to go up to do City of Blinding Lights and whatnot. And then he did his thing, and then came back, and he had Bono's glasses, and he had Bono's jacket, and really quickly, someone came with another waiver, and he had to sign it right there, right then and there, on the side of the East stage. So he signed his waiver.
You will not sell these on eBay.
and then they actually switched out his jacket because he was swimming a bit in Bono's jacket, so they actually gave him another jacket that kind of fit him better. But he got to keep the glasses, so I thought that was kind of interesting. Again, show was over. We waited for a little bit in our area that was surrounded by security, and then right away when the show was done, into the vans, and then after show two, they kind of drove us around and got to see the lights of Paris and got to see the Christmas stuff, and then came back to the hotel. And the woman in charge of us, she bought us like 25 pizzas, and we just ate and joked around and laughed, and we had a real good together moment about the whole affair of the weekend. And then the next morning, I was on a plane coming back, going, "What the heck just happened? Yeah. What the heck just happened?"
You were living in the moment. This whole tour, you know, put the phones away, live in the moment, live in the experience. And for you and all the others, you were able to do that.
Yeah.
And nobody could ever take that away from you.
Yeah. It was definitely a mind-blowing experience to know I was a guest of the band, or the band required our presence, even if it was just for a bit.
You were summoned to Paris.
I should mention the other thing. So after we were on stage, and then we came off the stage, all of a sudden, there's like a zillion floating cameras now, people walking with cameras, filming. And so there's a few times where, you know, bad or during one, and this dude with the camera would come right in your face, like, right in your face, and you're like, okay, Better sing these lyrics properly. Better sing these lyrics. Don't look at the camera. 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 Just sing these. Sing properly. Sing loud. Don't fake it.
Don't pick my nose.
You've got a million things going in your head. You got this HBO oversized camera, right? Like when I say right in your face, right in your face.
Well, you know that
never made it as part of the broadcast for what it's worth.
Probably because I was faking it and I didn't know the words.
Because well, sure you are only a bass player, and the bass player in a YouTube band does not do any singing.
That's right. Nothing. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Isn't that Adam that does that part? Forget it.
Yeah, his one
Adam sings a little bit in one of the songs.
Yeah, it's just the zooming in, zooming out.
Right.
What are you when you're on stage and like, you know, there's obviously other fans around you on stage and stuff, but are you looking at the audience? Are you trying to like watch the band? What's sort of going through your mind on stage, just as far as where do you look and what do you sort of
do?
So
I turned around and I remember seeing one of the women, I think it was Laura from Holland. So I turned around and looked at Laura and I was kind of, you know, doing that dancing, looking at her while dancing. Then I turned around and then I was dancing with another woman. I think it was the woman from Italy. And so I was looking at them at first. Then I was looking at the crowd. So a few times I looked at the crowd. And then I remember when we were walking back, I was like, okay, have a good time up here, which I was. Have a good time and don't club anyone with your arms. And then at one time I remember I kind of don't ask me why, but like I said, that little guy Jacob and I got along so well. So there was a time where we were kind of I was kind of like embracing him and dancing, and then kept dancing some more. So I was trying to do everything, like interact with the crowd, but at the same time, when I saw Trish had the meerkat on me, smile and look happy and just go for it. Just get down.
I loved how Jacob positioned himself in front of Larry's kit and he was air drumming to Larry.
Yes.
And Larry's look on his face, that was brilliant.
Yes. Yes. Afterwards, when we were talking about it at the hotel, he was telling me how, Jacob had a funny story about how when we were all saying our goodbyes, getting off the stage, he goes, Jacob said, I think Larry likes me the best. And we were like, why does Larry like you the best? And he goes, because Larry hugged me like this. And he did a cheek to cheek motion that Larry went cheek to cheek with him.
Okay.
And I was like, Jacob, you're lucky, man. I didn't go cheek to cheek with Larry. In fact, when I go to Larry, I kind of like give him a fist bump, or I try not to touch him too, you know.
Just like, not break the Larry.
Yeah, what's up, Larry? How you doing? Just kind of, you know. I do fist bump, and I think once I've shaken his hand, but I don't want to be too firm. Just like, yeah, you know. Anyway,
I'll dance it all again.
What struck me watching all of you guys just jumping on that E stage was when the crowd was invited to rush the I stage. Where was it? In Montreal?
Montreal, right.
And the crew had an absolute panic attack because it wasn't designed to take that many people jumping and the weight. I started wondering, I hope the E stage can take all of that. It's
same thing. When my son and I were watching the HBO broadcast, and that came on, he said the same thing. He said, is that safe with all those people up there? And I'm like, I have no idea, but I sure hope so.
But you know what? That floor is like super, super sturdy. That floor is super sturdy. It's on risers and everything. But I got to take a good look at that underworld area. It was sturdy. It was sturdy. Yeah. Really, really sturdy. I wasn't worried about that for sure.
Whereas the eye stage, you've got underworld underneath that. And it's pretty hollow underneath. So the level of support on the eye stage isn't as strong as what it would be out on the E stage.
Right. Someone mentioned on my Facebook that when they look at some of the overhead shots of us dancing on the stage, it was reminiscent of, like, you know, Charlie Brown's Christmas special.
Yes.
Charlie Brown's Christmas special. You know, the when they're dancing, yeah. And I was like, yeah, it's kind of like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
So how Joy Smith actually asked this, at Joy Smith asked this through the hashtag AskIU2 on Twitter. Overall, how well did the HBO broadcast capture the spirit of the tour? And so she's not just talking about just the Paris show, obviously, where Mark was at, but you can speak to that, I guess, a bit, because obviously you were at the recording. But you guys who have been there, did the HBO broadcast that you watched sort of capture everything? Was it, what was the your impression of the way that it was presented on HBO versus what it's like live and what you'd seen sort of before that?
You know what? Coming home in the hotel, getting to the hotel, show's over, I'm online, and then I find a stream of someone streaming the HBO show. So I'm watching the stream of the show that I was just at, and I was kind of trippy. And ready for this? Because of the jet lag and everything, the excitement, I was so tired that I actually couldn't even stay up till elevation. I actually had to go to bed because I had to catch the flight the next morning. So by the time, just before Mysterious Ways, I couldn't even. So from what I saw of it, what got me was it was so polished. It looked so polished, like smooth, really smooth. That's how I felt watching the HBO special. And watching what I just witnessed to this thing now being on TV, it just seemed absolutely gorgeous. Gorgeous, sweet, smooth, transition. It just seemed polished. And I had friends back in Toronto who were texting me and whatever, and they're not even, some friends who are not even U2 fans, they're like, this is why they're the best band in the world. This is amazing. Oh my gosh, look at that screen. And they're going on and on. I'm like, yeah, brother, I've been trying to tell you this forever.
Yeah.
I've been trying to tell you about
exactly.
this. For the yes. Anyway. So I should mention, obviously, at the very end, Bono says, you know, these people had their stage stolen from them. And, you know, we want to give them our stage tonight. And so when the Eagles of Death Metal come out and they do People Got the Power, it felt like a powerful, powerful moment. Like I didn't get tears in my eyes, but I felt my heart like just burst with just this this feeling of, oh my goodness, this is huge for these guys to be back up on stage and for U2 to be doing this.
And that really translated well in the broadcast. I had tweeted while it was happening, because Fancast did the last four songs of the show and titled it "And Now for Your Moment of Zen," which was really sweet. And as soon as that had finished, I had tweeted to HBO, please do not edit a single minute of that. And so when the broadcast happened and it included not only People Have the Power, but
their other song,
but the I Love You More song, you could feel emanating from the TV screen that catharsis.
Mm-hmm. And that's the word, catharsis.
And it just felt like, you know, they didn't want People Have the Power to end. Bono had to step in the role of conductor and get everybody to stop playing it because that would have kept going for at least another 25 minutes.
Easily. And so when they come out on stage, my wife kept saying something to me like, you know, Mark, think about like post-traumatic, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder or anything bad that happens in your life. At some point, you got to be able to get back up And she's like, U2 is helping them get back up and, you know, gain their confidence back and providing them with this safe environment to do this again in Paris. It felt like, to me, it felt like rock and roll history or something. I felt like I was watching something momentous. And then when they did their own song, right, and the lead singer made his way all the way to the E stage by himself, I just felt like, wow, this is bananas. Wow, he's got confidence again. He feels good. He's given her. It was a moment. It truly was. Every U2 show I go, oh, that was the best U2 show I saw. That was the best U2 show I saw. Well, that one, this was the best U2 show I've seen, period. End of story.
It took 76 shows.
That was number 41, actually. That was number 41.
No, but that was number 76 on the tour.
On the tour, yeah. And, to be right.
Yeah, and getting back to Chris's original question, it did feel polished, but I felt like they knew that this was going to broadcast. This is going to be the official record of the indoor shows. So, you know, I, to quote Bono's dad, well, that was very professional. That's what it felt like. But at the same time, you know, thinking about, yes, it's U2 in Paris. It was the same songs, but it was a completely different spirit than what we would have gotten had nothing happened back in November. Had that show on the 14th happened, it would have just been a show. It would have been a great show. But because of the world events, even though it was the same songs, it was a completely different show because of that spirit that translated throughout. And for me, being able to follow the tour all the way through, that was the most solid the band has been. They were on point. And what I really enjoyed about what Hamish did was include as many audience shots as possible. And in some cases it was inevitable, but you know, you think about what this tour has been. It's without the audience, and Bono's come out and said, without them, we wouldn't be here. So to include so many audience close-ups and focusing in on the cell phone and then focusing off, that was part of the experience. It was a cell phone show. You know, so I kind of felt like we got the best of both worlds in what HBO provided, and Hamish was on point. There are others who disagree that I've already seen in various different places, but this was an impossible show to film to begin with because there's so many different points that you can be watching, but I think as a whole, they did a very good job.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, I know some people have watched it, you know, 5 and 6 and 10 times already. I've only watched it the once the night as it aired. I mean, we have it on the DVR, and I'll eventually watch it again and perhaps you know, perhaps be a little more analytical as I watch it a second time or a third time or whatever. But no, I just loved it. I thought it was done. I think Hamish did a fantastic job. And I know he doesn't have the most sterling reputation for some of his past work with U2 shows. But no, I thought he did a fantastic job. I thought the band was fantastic. I was glad that they didn't cut anything except for the little intermission, which I'm fine with. So,
yeah.
I don't understand. I mean, we get comments on our Facebook page and people tweeting at us, you know, that they're like legitimately angry that the set list was changed and that, you know, Electrica was dropped from the number 2 slot. I'm like, my God, it's a free concert by your favorite band, you know, that you're enjoying on HBO. Like, just enjoy it, right? Like, let's not be angry about every little thing. And so anyway, no, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And I mean, I agree with everything you guys have said. I said this in OTR that, you know, U2 is fantastic at, you know, this grand gesture thing. And, loved what the guy in Rolling Stone, I don't remember his name, he's not one of their regular music authors, I don't think, But he said that his comment was that U2 were born for moments like Monday Night Show and bringing Eagles of Death Metal on. And he's absolutely right. I think they handled it perfectly, and it was just a total, total class thing for them to bring Eagles of Death Metal on, play a song with them, and then leave and let them have the spotlight that they weren't able to enjoy, you know, 3 weeks ago at their own show. Yeah. So I just thought it was so... such an absolutely classy move for them to do that.
U2GW in the IRC chat room said, also, did anyone else notice the similarity between U2 giving their instruments to Eagles of Death Metal to finish the set and the Police giving U2 their instruments to finish the set on the Conspiracy of Hope tour in 86?
Yeah.
Well,
I think it's a bit of a stretch.
I do too. Yeah. I mean, the drummer took Larry's drums. I think the guitarist played Edge's guitar, and then Edge grabbed an acoustic. But I'm pretty sure the Eagles bass player had his own bass, didn't he? I'm not positive, but I think so.
But if you're talking about the significance of that, like, you know, the Police were, and not to take anything away from the Eagles of Death Metal, whatever, but the Police were a huge, huge band who gave their instruments to you too, to carry the torch.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Are they trying to suggest that you two is giving their instruments to the Eagles to carry the torch? I'm not so sure about that per se.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that, Mark. I don't think it's quite the same.
Someone told me on the side though, the Eagles of Death Metal. Somebody told me that their name comes from. Somebody was asking about a long time ago, asking about what kind of style of music do they play? Do they play death metal? And then someone said, no, they're like the Eagles, the band of death metal. And that's how they got their name. Am I making sense?
Yeah.
Yep. I got you.
Yeah. Someone said, no, they're like the Eagles of death metal, meaning that they don't really play death metal. They're, you know what I mean? Which they don't. Well, their name is, you know.
All I know is that when they were playing their own song and I'm online and I'm, you know, we're doing the Twitter, Sherry's doing the Twitter thing, I guess, and Ross was up to, anyway, I'm trying to figure out what the name of this song is. And so I do a search for, you know, I figure out the lyric and I do a search and it shows the cover of this album that it's on. And the cover of the album is like this naked girl with things covering, you know, little stars covering her nipples or whatever. And do not suggest that as a title for the podcast. Do not even suggest that. Anyway, so I looked at it and I'm like, wow, this is like 180 degree opposite of a U2 type, you know, image that the band wants to present. So I'm like, well, this is like very not U2-y, but, you know, strange bedfellows are made by, you know, extraordinary circumstances.
Strange. What's the lead singer's name? What's the lead singer's name of Eagles of Death Metal?
Isn't it Jamie something? Or?
And he's apparently
Jesse.
A big...
Jesse, that's it, yeah.
He's a big... Anyway, he has very, very different political views than, let's say, your average U2 fan.
Oh, really?
I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Which I think speaks to like U2's ability still to like not just like play politics with it or whatever and just be like you said, Matt, like born for moments like this where they are able to just, you know, see what's going on, react to it appropriately and not, yeah, get caught up in the political
Is there any other band that you would have wanted to bring Eagles of Death Metal on their stage? Like, would Coldplay have handled it? And I like Coldplay. Don't get me wrong. Like, would Coldplay have handled it as well? Would, you know, any other? There's no other band that would have handled it as well as U2. And I know I'm a fan and I'm biased and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I really believe that they were in the right place at the right time to do exactly what they did.
And as a person who was in that arena, I just felt this was a special moment. This was a special moment, and for all involved and all who were there. And I even know, you know, the music may not be for the average U2 fan, but everybody who was in that arena was engaged and listening and appreciative of the Eagles of Death Metal and appreciative that they are getting back on their horse to give it a go. So
yeah, it speaks as much for the U2 fan too, that community around them, you know, that would appreciate that. Like you could see other bands, fans would just kind of walk away at that point, knowing the show's over or whatever, you know, like right. not really getting into it. So very cool. Just one question that was in there that's at C. Conan's asked, the concert broadcast on HBO was from the first or second show in Paris?
It was technically the fourth show, right. But it was the second one.
Yeah.
That was Monday's show. Now, that said, they did have Sunday's show available as a backup in case of technical difficulties. And what was interesting was Fareed Zakaria GPS that aired on CNN on Sunday, but that was recorded a few days prior. They had HBO footage from what it looked like the second Paris show back in November to feed into their B-roll footage.
Right. Yeah, makes sense. That rehearsed spontaneity that U2 is good at. So
apparently they did a lot of rehearsing, like camera rehearsing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
A lot of camera blocking and rehearsing. So I'm also thinking maybe that's why we didn't get to have that meet and greet, because they was busy. So I'm not sure.
No, I will say this, though. After viewing what HBO had filmed back in November, having those extra 3 weeks, I'm sure helped in figuring out final camera blocking, because it was a far better directed product for the final broadcast.
Yeah, that definitely would help. Because I was going to say, I remember reading in At the End of the World, or Until the End of the World, Bill Flanagan's book about how much Bono and Edge, I think, obsessed over editing the Zoo TV video or something. I can't remember which video it was, but just like, you know, going every single frame and making sure whatever, and like not having the time to do that for this broadcast probably was, yeah, driving them a little bit nuts, but they've also probably matured a little bit in terms of letting some of that go. But
somebody else at the reins.
Yeah.
For sure.
So do we think that just last... maybe thought on this, but like when and not, I guess it's not if, it's when, but this gets repackaged in some form, whether it's, you know, like Blu-ray and iTunes video store or whatever and all that kind of stuff. Will the Eagles of Death Metal stuff be on that final package, do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Like it'll capture the whole experience. Yeah.
I mean, you know, their record people talk to their record people and some stuff gets signed.
They're all the same family.
Oh, they're all Interscope or Live Nation or whatever.
Universal,
yeah. So I'm sure it's definitely possible.
Yeah,
definitely. I can't see why not. I can't see why not.
I would just hope that they put Fly back in,
like,
because now you don't have any broadcasting issue. But you know, you think about what happened with the Rose Bowl, and Breathe was omitted from the commercial release, yet for the YouTube broadcast we all had the opening song, you know. So it all depends on what they decide to do, but I would hope that we get the complete show and not the slightly edited one.
Yeah,
really, you think so? Because You think so? Well, you think so? Like the Fly? I mean, there's the Fly, and they have the words flashing on the screen, mm-hmm. and whatever. But I don't know if that is good enough for viewing, watching the words flick across the screen without them.
So, who has watched the Pop Mart video lately? I have not watched that in probably a year. Did they have the dancing guy before the you know, before the lemon comes out, is that included in the Pop Mart?
That is in the Pop Mart with the guy with the chandelier over his eyes. Is that what you're talking about? Dancing?
Yeah, the lemon. To the lemon remix.
Yes, that is in the Pop Mart video. I'm very sure.
Yeah, Mount Temple 4 in the chat room says yes.
Okay, so maybe yes. So
2 months ago. So yeah.
So okay, maybe it'll be there.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward to it. That definitely feels like a concert that in as much as other ones have been rewatchable, I feel like this one is, I don't know why, just something major. Like we've talked about the extra emotion that's in the concert and everything else is just kind of heightened. And also being like the first sort of modern era 5K or whatever cameras that they would have had, just, you know, getting it on a nice big screen and et cetera and stuff. Will be fun watching and blasting it really loud.
Chris, did you get to watch it on HBO?
No, I didn't. That's what I was going to say. Val, YouTube fan and podcast listener, periscoped a bit of it. I was, she didn't actually HBO if you're listening, but she may have. And so I saw footage of what folks were talking about. But yeah, no, it's for reasons that we don't need to go into, but just isn't in my cable package right now, but because I don't have cable. But so yeah, it'll be something that I'm looking forward to. Catching very much and probably was like, you know, similar to hearing about the concert and then actually listening to a concert similarly here. It was kind of like, well, it's just a YouTube concert, it'll be good, I'm sure it'll be fun. But like seeing the tweets and stuff of people's reaction to it and then hearing you guys talk about it and obviously everything that happened with Mark and all the other fans that got on stage, it's just kind of like, now it's like, okay, now I need to see this. So
we'll yes see. I agree,
definitely. So
and then we will have an entire podcast dedicated to you finally being able to react to seeing this tour.
Oh my God.
Full of that, I think.
And here is your trivia answer. The dancer in the Pop Mart video, his name was Lee Bowery.
Lee Bowers. Nice. Oh, Bowery. Yeah, okay, that's right.
Not Bowers. Wow.
Wow.
Thank you.
I have no idea if that's right, but I'll just ding because I'm assuming it is.
One more thing I wanted to add, and this is kind of outside. So in regards to our trip, before the second show, the U2 people, they organized for us to go on like one of those bus tours. So we went on a double-decker bus tour, and we got to see all of Paris in 2 hours.
Super
on the bus.
Cool.
And so we didn't get to go into any of the places. We just you plug in the headphones, you choose your language, and then the person says, if you look to your right, you will see the blah, 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 blah. If you look to your left.
Yeah.
So I got to see all of Paris in 2 hours. The Louvre, the Arc de Triomphe, the this, the that, the this. So I got to see all that. And then the YouTube people took us out for a lunch that day on the Saturday. And it was a three-course lunch, French cuisine, phenomenal. I think I had the steak and I had some oysters and I had, anyway, and that was really nice too.
Dang.
But the people who were in charge of us were phenomenal. And when we sat eating pizza, she said that management often kept calling me, asking about how people were and if our nerves were holding up and if we were okay, if we were comfortable, if we were okay and if we were going stir crazy or not. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Nice.
Right. And one other cool thing was because we were putting this holding room for those 2 days, after the first night of being in the holding room, I said to Carol, you know, I want to be able to go out and buy a T-shirt. They have, you know, for these European shows, sometimes they have a special T-shirt that's made. And they had one made with the boy with the. What's his name? You know, from the War album,
yeah,
Peter Rowan. Peter Rowan holding a flag, a French flag, and in French it says, "We are not afraid." And so, you know, that's a Paris specific U2 shirt.
I wanted to buy one of those.
So I wanted that shirt. So I said to Carol, "I want to be able to go out and buy this shirt as opposed to being stuck in this holding room." And so she says to me, "Can you email me a picture of the shirt?" So I go and I find it and I email it to her. And then while we're having lunch, the three-course lunch, she goes, big thank you to Mark. We've decided that we're going to get shirts for every single person here.
Oh, nice.
I was like, what? And so first it was for the winners, but even our plus ones also got the shirt. And so she, you know, so there are times where they really went out of their way for us, I felt.
Yeah.
To do stuff. Anyway.
Well, you should have. I'm betting you're regretting saying you wish you had a Telecaster like Edge was playing.
You get to keep the guitar.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And we really appreciate Mark coming on. I don't know if you're over your jet lag or just kind of in recovery mode still? But
I'm in recovery mode. I've been doing a lot of sleeping, but awesome. Recovery mode.
It's great to
thank
hear.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys. You guys do it upright. You're the CNN of the YouTube world.
Wait. As long as I'm not Wolf Blitzer. No. I am not Wolf Blitzer. No way.
Volcano star.
I don't think CNN has sound clips and
bring it. No,
but you guys have always been great on the information. Yeah, definitely. Well,
thank you.
We strive to maintain the giggles to a few. Yes. Where can folks follow you, Mark, if they want to ask you more questions that we didn't get through?
They can contact me, YouTube Brother, on Twitter, YouTubeBrother, or you can do the same with my Gmail. So YouTubeBrother@gmail.com. And I'm on Facebook as YouTubeBrother. And I don't know.
You're on maybe YouTube.
Maybe I need to dream it all up again. Maybe I got to retire the silver hat and dream it all up again. Yeah. Who knows?
Definitely. And I'll just answer any critics or whatever who say, you know, give up the stage or let someone else be on. I think you said it best. I don't know if it was before we recorded or whenever, but just, you know, I wouldn't say no if Bono and you two called me up on stage. And more power to you, Mark. And who knows how many other times you'll get pulled up on stage. And I hope you get it gets to happen again, and I hope it gets to happen for other folks too. But there's no need to tear each other down over good things happening to one person.
Amen.
Good karma goes a long way on tour. That's what I always say.
Yeah.
So I always try and be as kind and nice and helpful to people as possible, and I think good things come your way when you behave properly, behave like a real UT fan would. So.
And always be ready to carry Bono at a moment's notice. Always be.
With or without a Merce.
Yeah.
Last time he bent my license plate, so I figured a Merce would be easier, you know? So.
How about you, Matt? Where can folks ask you more questions about your experience of watching the HBO broadcast?
At Matt McGee is the easiest place to get a hold of me. The worst place to get a hold of me is LinkedIn or Facebook messages.
I think probably Snapchat is the worst place to get a hold of you.
Snapchat.
Yeah. How about you, Sherry? What's your Snapchat address?
My Snapchat address. I can't remember what I logged in as, but
Potty Mouth McBoston.
But on Twitter, I'm at YouTubeComSherry.
All right, and I'm iChris. I'm iChris306 on the Snapchats, if you can figure that out. But as of yet, since tweeting it yesterday, I don't think anybody's found me on there, so I don't think the YouTube community is grabbing onto Snapchat like they have other things. This episode of the At YouTube podcast, you can find at goodstuff.fm/at-u2/21 is this particular number. You can listen to the previous 20 episodes if you're new to the show at all. And follow the At YouTube crew on Twitter, at U2 on there, ATU2. And facebook.com/atu2com is where you can find us on Facebook if you want to like us there. As we mentioned in the show, you can use #AskAtU2 on Twitter to send in questions, comments, suggestions for the show, any sort of follow-up things you wish we would have asked Mark or whatever, things about Snapchat, whatever it might be. And one other hashtag that I'll keep sort of pimping, I guess, for folks. We want to see where you're listening to the show in the world. And if you use #AtU2podcast and post a little picture of yourself listening to the show somehow, if you can figure out that. Probably don't do it to Snapchat because we won't find it, but otherwise we will try and find you. I think that's it for this show. Thanks again, Mark, and thanks to you all for listening. We'll see you again next episode. Bye.
Yum, 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 yum,